absolute truth. But the perfect knower, without wasting his valuable time, engages directly in Krishna consciousness, the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Throughout the whole of Bhagavad Gita, this fact is being stressed at every step. And still there are so many stubborn commentators on Bhagavad Gita who consider the Supreme Absolute Truth and the living entities to be one and the same. Vedic knowledge is called Shruti, learning by oral reception. One should actually receive the Vedic message from authorities like Krishna and his representatives. Hare Krishna distinguishes everything very nicely. Here, Krishna distinguishes everything very nicely. And one should hear from the source. Simply to hear like hawks is not sufficient. One must be able to understand from the authority. It is not that one should simply speculate academically. One should submissively hear from Bhagavad Gita that these living entities are always subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone who is able to understand this, according to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, knows the purpose of the Vedas. No one else knows the purpose of the Vedas. The word bhajati is very significant. In many places, the word bhajati is expressed in relationship with the service of the Supreme Lord. If a person is engaged in full Krishna consciousness, in the devotional service of the Lord, it is to be understood that he has understood all the Vedic knowledge. In the Vaishnava Parampara, it is said that if one is engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, then there is no need for any other spiritual process for understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth. He has already come to the point because he is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He has ended all preliminary processes of understanding. But if anyone, after speculating for hundreds of thousands of lives, does not come to the point that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that one has to surrender there, all his speculation for so many years and lives is a useless waste of time. So reading the translation again. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting, is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharat. So, Bhagavad Gita is the book where Krishna is telling the living entities about the absolute knowledge. From the beginning we can see, step by step, Krishna is revealing the absolute knowledge to the living entity. In the beginning we see how Krishna made a discrimination between matter and spirit. That's the first thing Krishna did in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna very expertly described the difference between matter and spirit. And then, gradually, Krishna established himself as the Supreme Spirit. Living entities, we all are actually spiritual beings. We all are spirit souls. We all are spiritual. But our bodies are not spiritual. Our bodies are made of matter. So in this way, there is a difference between this body and ourselves. Like we can see the difference between a living body and a dead body. What is the difference between a living body and a dead body? Dead body is inert. The dead body cannot move Dead body cannot talk. Dead body cannot think. But a living body can. Now, what enables a living entity, a living body, to perform all these activities, whereas the dead body cannot? The answer is, in the living body there is a spirit soul, whereas in a dead body, that spirit soul is missing. Actually, this body is dead body. Matter is dead, and the body that is made of matter is also dead, isn't it? What's this body made of? This body is made of matter, isn't it? Or does anybody have any other ideas? No, this body is made of matter, right? And matter is dead, inert. Matter is inert, like this one, this microphone. Is it living or is it dead? Inert. This table, this glass, everything, all these are matter and they are inert. But our bodies are living. Although our bodies are made of matter, our bodies are alive. What makes our bodies alive? The answer that has been given by Krishna in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that is because of the presence of the spirit soul. As long as the spirit soul is in the body is alive. As soon as the spirit soul leaves the body, what happens to the body? Dead body becomes dead. Like now I'm talking to you, and you all are thinking, he is sitting here and he's talking to us, giving a class on Bhagavad Gita. But if I drop dead now, although my body will be lying here, you will say, he is gone. Won't you say that? He is gone. Now, who is that he that is gone? The spirit soul. And that spirit soul is our real identity. We are spiritual beings. And because of our presence in this material nature, the material nature has become alive. If all the spirit souls, if all the living entities leave this material nature, then what will happen to the material nature? The material nature will dissolve. That is called total annihilation. The total annihilation takes place when all the living entities are withdrawn from this material nature. And again, when the living entities are injected back onto the material nature, the material nature becomes manifest. Anyway, so in this way, Krishna explained in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita how there is a difference between matter and spirit. And the nature of spirit is again completely different from matter. They're diametrically opposed. Matter and spirit are diametrically opposed. You take the quality of matter and just think of the opposite quality, and that is the quality of spirit. For example, matter is inert. Now, what is the opposite quality of inertness? What is opposite to inert? Eric? No, just the normal term. Right. Or conscious, sentient. Sentient. The opposite to inert is sentient or conscious. So matter is inert, so spirit is Henry? Conscious. Right. Now matter is static. And spirit is, what is opposite to static? Matter doesn't have the ability to move. Right, movement. Bewegung. Yeah? Or, Prabhupada actually used the expression, opposite to static is ecstatic. So ecstasy is dynamic. Static, opposite to static, is actually dynamic. Living entities are dynamic. Wherever there is life, there is movement. Isn't it? The more alive one is, the more dynamic he is. So in this way, now let us consider even finer qualities. Matter is miserable. Right? Now what is opposite to miserable? Opposite to miserable is joyful. Spirit is joyful. Matter is transient, or matter is temporary. Right? Matter doesn't last forever. Matter has its creation, maintenance, and destruction. Now, what is opposite to that quality of temporary? Spirit is permanent or eternal. Matter is perishable, but spirit is eternal. Matter is destructible, but the spirit is indestructible. So in this way, very systematically and scientifically, Krishna actually establishes the difference between matter and spirit. Krishna gives a very distinct qualities of the spirit. Krishna is saying, Noinang chindanti shastrani, noinang dahati pavaka, na chainang kledayanta apu, nayang shoshayati maruta. The spirit cannot be cut by any weapon. This body can be cut by any weapon, right? Or body can be killed. But the spirit cannot be. You can get the biggest nuclear weapon and that won't be able to, although it may destroy the body, but you won't be able to do anything to the spirit. The most powerful nuclear weapon cannot do a damn thing to the spirit. Noinang chinnanti shastrani, noinang dahuti pavaka. The spirit soul cannot be burnt by fire. Na chainang kledayanta apu. The spirit soul cannot be moistened or drowned by water. And the spirit soul cannot be dried by air. In this way, Krishna gives the qualities of the spirit soul. And then Krishna says that the spirit soul is never born and the spirit soul will never die. Na jayate mriyateva kadachin, nayang bhutva bhavitava na bhuya, ajo nitto shashyato ayang purana, na hannate hannamani sharira. The spirit soul is never born, nor will it ever die. The spirit soul is eternal, the spirit soul is everlasting. So that is the quality of spirit soul. And then Krishna establishes the fact that although there are many, many spirit souls, but He is the Supreme Spirit. And that is the identity of God. When we say God, what is the definition of God? What's the meaning of God? When we say God, what do we actually mean? Actually, unfortunately, in the West, there is no specific definition of God. But Bhagavad Gita gives a very, very clear understanding of who God is. And the preliminary understanding of God is, the basic understanding of God is that He is the Supreme Spirit. It has been described as Nitta Nittanam Chetanas Chetananam Eka Bohunam Jo Vidodhati Kaman. There are many spirit souls who are eternal and who are conscious. But of all the spirit souls, there is a supreme spirit soul. And that supreme spirit is God. And he is Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. Just as God is omnipotent or all powerful, just as God is omniscient or all knowing, similarly God is all attractive. And in Sanskrit, the word Krishna means all attractive. So, who is all attractive? God is all attractive. Therefore, his name is Krishna. So in this way, Krishna makes a very systematic analysis of difference between matter, spirit, and the Supreme Spirit. That is, the matter is the material nature, the spirits are living entities, and the Supreme Spirit is God. That is the basic understanding. Now in this verse, Krishna is telling that one who knows me, he knows everything. Isn't it a very bold claim? Krishna is saying, actually, whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, is the knower of everything. See what a bold claim. And only God can make that kind of claim. One who knows me, he knows everything. Now one may contest this statement. He says, what makes you think like that? Just knowing Krishna, everything will be known? Yes. Because Krishna is the origin of everything, therefore, by knowing Krishna, everything becomes known. And those who know Krishna really knows everything. Actually, those who become devotees of Krishna, they are not fools. Although it may appear that they are quite weird, but actually, the devotees are the smartest people, the most intelligent people. They are the wisest people. And that's why they have surrendered themselves unto the Supreme Personality of God. Because they did not surrender to Krishna blindly. Actually, one cannot join the ISKCON movement blindly. Especially when one has to give up eating non-vegetarian food, give up all forms of intoxication, give up illicit sex and gambling, when there is such a strict condition to join this society, one cannot join blindly. One has to think very deeply. And when he commits himself to this movement, commits movement means when one commits himself to Krishna, then he must do it with proper understanding. And what is the understanding? A devotee understands the difference between matter, spirit, and understands the Supreme Spirit, Krishna. Therefore, he surrenders himself to Krishna. And if someone joins this movement blindly, he is not going to last for very long. For whatever reason he may have joined, as soon as that wears off, then he will go. First of all, I haven't seen anyone joining ISKCON without proper understanding. As I said, like, this is not an easy commitment, especially in today's world. How many people in this world are vegetarian? And in this world where practically everyone is a non-vegetarian, for them to become a vegetarian is a big commitment. Sachidulal, could you have become a vegetarian without being Krishna conscious? How many of you were vegetarians before you came to Krishna consciousness? Fully, before you came to Krishna consciousness. Very good. Some rare souls. Very good. Okay, how many of you did not take intoxication before joining the movement? Even rarer souls. So in this way we can see that. But here, how many of you are vegetarian today? Please raise your hand. So that makes a difference. Why? What made you all vegetarian? How many of you all don't take any intoxicants? Very good. Why? Because you are committing. There is some higher objective. So, actually the number of devotees are very few because of this commitment. Prabhupada said, if instead of four regulative principles, I had three regulative principles, then all my temples would have been overcrowded. Now, when one joins, none of you actually joined ISKCON either to become vegetarian or to become teetotaler, give up intoxication or follow the four regulative principles. You did not join ISKCON because of those reasons. Why did you all join ISKCON? Because you wanted to know Krishna and you wanted to surrender yourselves to Krishna. Now, why should we surrender to Krishna? Why should we surrender to Krishna? Anyone will give me an answer? Yes? Right. Because we can become eternally joyful. And we surrender to Krishna because He is the Supreme Lord. Constitutionally, naturally, our position is to be surrendered unto Him. When we surrender unto Him, we become joyful. When you don't surrender unto Him, then what happens? When you don't surrender unto Him, Madhu Mangal, yeah, we get bashed around. We get material nature just kicks us around. And it's not very nice to be kicked around by the material nature. So, when one becomes Krishna conscious out of his knowledge, and he understands, basically, he understands three things. He understands what is matter, what is spirit, and who is God. And if one knows that, then he knows everything. Therefore, knowing Krishna means knowing everything. As Krishna himself has very, very openly broadcast it here. Now let us consider how knowing Krishna is actually knowing everything. In the 7th chapter, Krishna is actually telling. The 7th chapter is very important. So everybody, please read this chapter very carefully. In the 7th chapter, in the very beginning, Krishna is saying, Maya Shakta Manah Partha Jogam Junjan Madashraya Asangshayam Samagrang Mang Yatha Dyashashi Tachri. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Krishna said, now hear, O son of Pritha, that is Arjuna, now listen to me. How by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, that is being completely conscious of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free. If you just become attached to me, then you will get to know. How? Because Krishna enlightened. Krishna explained in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that those who are constantly engaged in rendering service unto me with love and devotion, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. Then Krishna is telling the next verse, tesham evanu kampartham aham agyanajam tamo nashayami atmo bhavastho gyano dipena bhasha. Krishna is telling that tesham evanu kampartham, in order to show my compassion unto them, unto whom? Those who are constantly engaged in serving me. In order to show my compassion unto them, aham agyanajam tamo, I dispel the ignorance that's caused by darkness, the mode of darkness. And in plain simple words, I remove their ignorance. Jnana dipena bhasya, by the light of knowledge. Just as this room may be in darkness, but as soon as you switch on the light, where does the darkness go? Immediately darkness disappears. Similarly, Krishna dispels our ignorance by enlightening us from within. He enlightens us from within. He gives us the knowledge from within in order to show his compassion unto us. Therefore, devotees are not fools. Devotees are not ignorant. Devotees are actually the wisest people. In their part, they are simply serving Krishna. But Krishna enlightens them from within. And that's what Krishna is telling here in the 7th chapter. That Arjun, who is attached to me with his mind, can know me in full, completely can know Krishna free from any doubt. Then in the next verse, Krishna is telling, Gyanam te aham shavik gyanam idang baksham. There is one person who attains success. Out of thousands such perfected people, one becomes a devotee of Krishna. Now that means, out of 1 million, there is one devotee. 1,000 multiplied by 1,000 is 1,000,000. So out of 1 million people, there is one devotee. There is no doubt that there is so few of you today in this temple room. And of course, I think today is a special day. Many of you came who usually don't come. So we can see how rare it is to become a devotee. Then Krishna is explaining the difference between material nature. Now, what is this material nature? First, Krishna is explaining, what is this material nature? This material nature is consisting of bhumi rapo anolo vayu khang mano buddhi revacha ahankara iti angme inna prakriti asya. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego, all together, these eight constitute my separated material energy. See, as I was telling, like Krishna first explains the material nature, then he explains the living entities, and then he explains who he is. So when, by the time we get to know Krishna, we already understood what this material nature is, who we are, and thus we come to understand Krishna. This material nature consists of these eight elements. Now, next verse Krishna is telling, besides this, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this inferior material nature. That is, beyond this material nature, there is a superior nature. And the living entities are coming from this superior nature. And these living entities are exploiting this material nature. Then he is saying, all created beings have their source in these two natures, Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. So you can see just in three verses, Krishna is actually explaining who, what this material nature is, what the spiritual nature is, and who he himself is. He is explaining that he is of all created beings have their source in these two natures, material and spiritual nature. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, I am both the origin and dissolution. So Krishna is the source of everything, he is the origin of everything, and he is the cause of destruction of everything. So this is the Supreme Personality of God. Now Krishna is telling further about himself in the next verse. Should I read the Sanskrit also, or should we just read the English? Also. Krishna is saying, Matto paratarang nanyat kinchi darsti dhananjaya mai sarvam idang protang sutre manigana eva. O Arjun, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So you all must have seen some necklaces. Every one of you are actually wearing some beads. So these pearls are actually strung together by a thread. Right? Now one cannot see the thread, but that thread is actually holding everything together. Similarly, Krishna is actually holding everything together, although we cannot see him. And in this way, Krishna is the origin of everything, and Krishna is the maintainer of everything, and Krishna is the cause of destruction of everything. Therefore, if we just get to know Krishna, then everything will be. When you try to understand Krishna, or when you try to become Krishna conscious, we won't have to make any separate endeavor to know anything else. Just knowing Krishna, everything will be there. Therefore Krishna is telling that all you have to do is just render service unto me. Just render service unto me. Surrender unto me, and then everything will be there. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? You see, yoga literally means to become linked up. And yoga specifically means to become linked up with the Supreme Personality of God. And these other religions that you mentioned, especially Christianity and Islamism, did you mention Buddhism also? Yeah. Buddhism is different. But Christianity and Islamism, they also are speaking about yoga. But that is giving very, very, you know, basic informations of it. Like how to become linked up or how to become connected with God. They also are speaking about God, and they also are speaking about how to become connected to God. But there is not detailed understanding of that. That is the difference. Since you asked the difference, that is the difference. And Buddhism is different because Buddhism is actually a covered atheism. Buddha came to bewilder the demons, and he established this. Demons were exploiting the Vedic wisdom. The demons in the name of Vedas were performed as slaughtering animals. And in order to stop that animal sacrifice, Buddha came. And he said, there is no need to follow the Vedas. The ultimate goal of life is to become good. And the goal of life is to become good. And the ultimate goal of life is to become nothing. Shunya. Nihilism. Ultimately it is all void. Or void, not nihilism. Voidism. Everything is void. And you are suffering because you have become something. And when you become nothing, then there won't be any suffering. But Muhammad and Jesus spoke about God. But they actually spoke about God to some people who are not very cultured or intelligent or civilized. Consider who Muhammad was preaching to. Muhammad was preaching to the desert, the Arabs. Even today they are not civilized. And can you imagine how they were, 2,500 and 1,500 years ago? They were just, barbaric nomads. So he gave them the basic idea about God and told them, just surrender unto him. There's one God and you must surrender to that. Give it, like when you go to, you may be a big scholar, but when you talk to a little child, do you show your scholarship to him? No, you just give him the understanding as much as he can understand. Same thing with Jesus. He was also preaching to the Jews in Middle East, in Jerusalem. And so he gave them the basic understanding of God and told them to love God. Love thy father, the Lord, the God, with all thy heart. And we can see what kind of people they were. And the person who came to give them the love of God and show them the way back to God, they tried to crucify him. Are they very civilized? So, and Jesus himself said, I have much more to say. But you are not ready to accept or understand. But in Bhagavad Gita, the understanding is clear. Everything has been explained in detail. In Bhagavad Gita, never you find Krishna saying, I have much more to say, but you are not prepared to understand. On the other hand, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam saranam. Give up all your nonsense and just surrender. And Bhagavad Gita Krishna is saying, if you just get to know me, then everything will be known. That is how bold the teachings of Bhagavad Gita is. And it's not just some empty words. I mean, what to speak of Krishna announcing that, we, with whatever little understanding we have, we can see that we have answers to all questions. People get frustrated when they see that we have answers to all questions. They say, how come you have answers to all questions? They think that something is wrong with us. Yes, something is wrong with us from their relative consideration. And that wrong is that we are not, we decided not to remain in the illusory nature of it. And therefore, the ignorance has been removed. And we have become situated in knowledge. And a person who is situated in knowledge has answered to all questions. Therefore, we are practically the only ones in this world who boldly announce that if you have a question, we have the answer. In our programs, we often put a big banner in our question-answer booth. Like we do that in India, we do that in South Africa during our Rathi Jatra festival, or some big festival. We have a question-answer booth. And the slogan is, if you have a question, we have the answer. Yes. Thank you. when does Sanskrit land in Vilsia? Sondern wenn du sprechen willst. Yeah, I'll say it in English. Yeah. There are different ways. There are different ways of pronunciation. There are dental. The words, especially the consonants, the consonants have been divided into different types of pronunciation, like dental pronunciation, palatal pronunciation, and cerebral pronunciation. Like some words are coming from, oh well, then again, you know, lips. Lips and dental, palatal and cerebral. Right? Like some words are just pronounced with the movement of lips. Some words are pronounced with the tongue touching the teeth. Some words are pronounced with the tongue touching the palate, and some words are pronounced with the tongue touching the cerebra. So there are different M's, different N's, different S's. There are three types of S's: dental, palatal, and cerebral. Three types of M's, three types of N's. It's actually a very scientific language. And also the way words are pronounced has effects in your consciousness. Actually, we can see how language is very close to consciousness. Like you go to a factory worker and see how he speaks. And you go to a professor of a college, professor of a university, and see how he speaks. Do they speak the same language? Both of them may speak German, right? But there is a big difference in the way they speak. So in this way we can see that the words are actually an way of expressing our consciousness. The way our consciousness is, accordingly we speak, we use the words. Yeah. And anyway, since you are learning Sanskrit, it's not difficult actually. You just have to learn where you have to touch your tongue. And the words will come out automatically. The tongue will need some exercise. Is it okay? Yes, Harinam. Yeah, very good question. Yeah, very good question, because this calculation was, you see, this Krishna said 5,000 years ago. And at that time, what to speak of six devotees, in Switzerland, there was not even a single, right? All out of 6 million people, there was not a single devotee of Krishna. But 500 years ago, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and made this Krishna consciousness very easy and distributed it to everyone. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pure representative, Srila Prabhupada, came and he distributed it all over the world. And it's because of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada that Krishna consciousness is becoming so easily available to anyone in everyone. What to speak of today, you know, so many out of 6 million Swiss. A time is going to come, probably, when out of 6 million, 5 million Swiss will become devoted of Krishna. And mind you, this is only the beginning. Krishna consciousness, actually in the West, is only 25 years old. Christianity is 2000 years old, right? So give Krishna consciousness 2000 years and we'll see. And I can tell you, Krishna consciousness is not going to die. It's going to spread. It's going to spread like a forest fire. Reading books, So I mean, that's only in 25 years, not even 25 years. Actually, in Switzerland, we started preaching, say, about 20 years ago. And you, Navina, and all. Actually, in Switzerland, we started preaching, say, about 20 years ago. And you, Navina, and all these wonderful grandchildren of Srila Prabhupada in Switzerland are spreading it so wonderfully by distributing his book. Any other question? All glory to Krishna Prabhupada.